Coming up on today's show.
I just think that sometimes we sell ourselves short on the power that resides in us, in the creativity that God gave us. You know, we all have something in us.
Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, proud member of the Recording Academy, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Joining me today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Dallas, my guest is a member of the Grammy-nominated Dallas String Quartet, which bills itself as where Bach meets Bon Jovi and has charted at number one on Billboard. Less than 3 weeks ago, their newest album was released, titled A String Quartet Tribute to Taylor Swift, which was done alongside a four-time Grammy Award-winning engineer, mixer, and producer. They have performed for two presidents and collaborated with artists including Ed Sheeran and Luke Combs, appeared at the Academy of Country Music Awards, and famously performed at the wedding of Gwen Stefani and Blake Shelton. They are one of the most streamed crossover string groups in the world, with over 50 million streams on Spotify, where they have approximately 162,000 monthly listeners. You have been hearing Cruel Summer, the first song on their new album. Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Ion Zanka.
Hello, thank you for having me.
My pleasure, my pleasure. Ion, thank you so much for making time to speak with me today. Let's get started by having you share first about the Dallas String Quartet's version of Cruel Summer by Taylor Swift that was just playing. She has a massive catalog, so take us through the process of how you and the other members of DSQ would talk about and decide on, in this case, Cruel Summer, as a song you felt strongly about being chosen for this new album. What about that song appealed to you and the others?
So in the group, we have some of the members are big Swifties, so that has a strong, they have strong input on that in some of the songs they really relate to. And then also some of them, we wanted to do something that relates to the season we're in and the summer. And also that goes well with the orchestration of the string quartet. Pieces that are melodic, that has a good melody line. So that's kind of how we choose this particular song, kind of hit all those 3 points, you know, is relevant for the season. It is a big favorite of some of our members, and the melodies play really well with the strings, so it works well.
Okay, but I do want to ask you this question. As one knows, the word quartet implies four. So if there's four members in the Dallas String Quartet, and two say, let's do Cruel Summer, and two say, I don't want to do Cruel Summer, how does that get resolved, being that it's not an odd number and there is the potential for a tie vote?
You've given me the hard question. Well, there's two girls and two guys. I'm just going to say it this way. The girls usually win. That's how we decide that.
That means you must be married.
Yes, sir. All right. We fought a good fight for a while, and we realized that it was a losing battle. So we just said, you know, hey, if you guys like it, we'll do whatever you like.
Okay. But explain to the audience, though, there are variations of the Dallas String Quartet where you will go do a corporate event, you'll go do a private party, and it's not necessarily just the four of you, correct?
Well, so it is the four of us, but we do, on our tours, we add drums and guitar, and so it becomes a little bit bigger.
Right.
And so during the concerts, you know, it helps us to create bigger experiences. And then depends on the, sometimes with some of the private events, and we kind of adjust that based on the event. You know, if it's 1,500 people, you know, we want to add a little bit more to beef it up, you know. So that's kind of how we decide that.
but adding on additional musicians is only for live performances, correct? And something like your recordings is limited to just the four of you.
Correct. Or, for example, if there's a song that we want to add a pianist or something like that, then we'll add a guest musician to it. But the recordings, yeah, there's just the main members. And then if a song requires a guest, sometimes we like a piano or a guitar or a harp, whatever instrument, then we bring a guest to track with us.
Tell us, Ian, not only why Taylor Swift's music translates so naturally to strings, but how you preserve the emotional arc of a song without lyrics?
Well, that's a very good question. It's, you know, for the artist, you know, the lyrics are what's really resonating with people. And then you have the second verse that is different. But when you have an instrumental, the second verse is just like the first verse. And so what we try to do, we try to build through orchestration and start maybe smaller in the first verse. We like to add a lot of variety on some of them. For example, we would start with long string pads, and in the second verse, we would do more like different things like pizzicatos or different things that will add different texture to the song that you don't normally hear in the first time. So it feels a little bit different. So we try to use harmonies and instrumentation to build and sort of bring that arch to where the song feels fresh, whether it's the first or second verse.
Did you find, though, in fact, that doing this album, that maybe Taylor Swift's music did translate a little more naturally to strings, more so than maybe some more challenging songs that you've done in the past?
Absolutely. And I used to think that kind of all of her songs translated well, but to be honest with you, she has quite a few that are more rhythmical and very driven by percussion type deal. And one of the songs on the album, I think it's called Blank Space and Bad Blood, I think. A couple of them are really very rhythmical. And so we had to use some like different techniques and kind of use percussive and hitting an instrument and creating all kind of rhythms through that, because the melody itself was not particularly strong and the harmony was just like one chord, but the driving rhythm was the star of the song. So we tried to do it that way.
But I wonder then, thinking back to what we just talked about in terms of sometimes adding musicians for live performances, as you were picking out which songs would go on this album, did you think to yourselves, well, wait a minute, if we do this song, it's going to be tough to duplicate live? Or is it a case of, no, it's actually easier to do live, we just had to figure out how we would do it in the studio?
Yes. Well, so a lot of our audience is used to more of the acoustic vibe, you know, of the group on the recordings. But in the live concerts, we do have percussions and we do have additional instruments. So in theory, it's easier live because we have, but we don't want to put a drum set on a recording because our audience is not used to that, if that makes sense.
Interesting. For my audience, as a nod to the Taylor Swift Travis Kelce wedding, the cover of the A String Quartet Tribute to Taylor Swift album, you will see, audience, it was inspired by a luxurious wedding invite. Ian, the Dallas String Quartet essentially created a musical wedding invitation. Why design an album around the feeling of receiving a wedding invitation rather than simply recording covers?
It goes back to what we're talking about this season. You know, a lot of people know that the big wedding is happening this summer. And how do we really know Taylor Swift? We're all fans, but we all know her through her music. And so what we tried to do with this was an invitation to her music throughout the eras, and music that brought her in our lives, in our houses, that we got used to, that we were familiar with. And so it's kind of a preview of her career and coming to this culmination, this beautiful moment that is the wedding. And obviously the majority of people won't be able to attend, but that's what we envision if we had to kind of do an invitation, a card of her career with some of her most impactful and beautiful songs.
I like it. All right, folks. Last week on the show, I revealed an upcoming trip as part of my ongoing aim to meet listeners of this show in person. During my conversation on episode 647 with Johnny Reed, I announced that I will be out west next month, at the Las Vegas Songwriters Festival, which is taking place from August 20th to the 22nd at the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino. If you or someone you know are or will be in the area, maybe even attending that event, do get in touch so that we can meet. I am actually still finalizing those dates and am scrambling to book a trip that will happen before that one. Once that one is set, look for details in the weekly e-newsletter and on the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. It means that much to me that you take time to listen to this show every week, that I would love to say a personal thank you face to face, not to mention take a picture together, chat about the show, and just get to know the listeners better, more personally. Eon, let's do some background setting before we pick the conversation back up about the Dallas String Quartet's music. Share with the audience about your upbringing in Eastern Europe, as well as moving to the United States and building an entirely new musical career.
I moved to America when I was 18, and I went to LSU and went to study here in the United States. I had quite of an experience because I wasn't sure, you know, exactly what the whole process, how it went. We in Romania had scholarships, you know, meant, you know, like living expenses. And I got a scholarship in the United States, but it was just for the school. And I was very, very surprised that I didn't have that scholarship that didn't cover all that part. So I had quite of a rough start to my life in America. So because I didn't bring a whole lot, I told my mom I'm going to be my own independent person and I'm not going to need any money or support because I have a scholarship. And so I was very, very, very surprised when the scholarship covered only the school itself. So it took me quite of a second to get going. So I had to find out ways to work and to find a way to support myself. And English was my second language. Not great now. It wasn't great back then. So it was quite a journey.
When was that you moved to the United States? When was it that you came over for LSU?
It was 2001. 2001, and it was in August, right before 9/11. It was a series of events. It was a tough start, but, you know, I was blessed that everything worked out.
But is it safe to assume that in Romania, you had been doing music, and thus your eye was on, I'm going to go to a school in the United States to continue music?
I've been doing music since I was six. My parents are musicians. My grandparents are musicians. And so it was quite a journey. And then I studied there at the conservatory. And I moved. When I moved, I started at LSU and then transferred to SMU.
So having heard about your journey, tell us about the evolution of Dallas String Quartet. How DSQ has grown from a regional ensemble into a Grammy-nominated Billboard charting act.
Oh man, it's one of those journeys that you just hope, you know, that you work hard and you hope that things will happen. And I feel like it's been kind of like that. We just kept playing and recording and trying everything from trying to find our voices because, you know, we're a string quartet and, you know, it's not like something new. So we tried to find our own niche with it. And the amount of work and different music that we recorded, it was very interesting. We have albums that are fully jazz and albums that are covers. The album we did maybe 2 years ago that it was on Billboard, that's our first original. We did it with London Symphony. So it's been a long journey, but one that we try to learn new things and advance in what we do. I mean, it's a blessing. There's no other way to say it. I recognize the blessing that it is to be able to do what I do and be able to have a career out of it.
Would you say that there was something you could point to along the way that really kind of helped escalate DSQ from a regional ensemble into what eventually has become a Grammy-nominated Billboard charting act, maybe some significant development with DSQ or maybe a particular opportunity that you got that I don't want to say, you know, that kind of unlocked everything, but I think for those who are listening who are aspiring performers, they're going, well, how did they do it, though? Like, how did they go from being regional to where they are now?
That's a great question. I think what's the first thing that helped us, it was just recording our music. So I was in college, and I was playing in the symphony, and my goal was not to have a string quartet and do what I do now. I was training to play with a symphony. Mm. But I was trying to, being an international student, I wanted to, you know, play some gigs and do some stuff to support myself. And I had this one client that asked me, we were playing a wedding for them, and asked me, like, if I could record the songs that we were going to play for them at the wedding. It was just love songs and modern songs, to give the CD as the wedding present to the guest, you know, like one of those party favors, I think they call it. And he said, look, this was the best one. We'll give you $1,000 to go record this. So we went and played two times through like the pieces. That was the experience that I had recording. And so we did this album, and I said, you know, after we finished, we get like, maybe we could add a few more songs, edit a little bit, make it a little bit better. Maybe we can release it, you know, as a first album. I think that was the key, because then we switched to electric instruments. I think that's the other part that kind of helped us a lot. Because we were doing, in 2007, we were one of the few, we talked to Yamaha, and they made one of the first full set of electric violins. Because they were electric violins and stuff, but we asked for a full set of two violins, viola and a cello, full electric, all white Yamaha violins. So they made us a custom set. And then we started doing these public performances, playing what we thought it was modern music, and it was Beatles in tangos by Piazzolla. And I was like, wow, this is so modern. You know, never, I didn't think of Taylor Swift back then, but I thought Beatles was modern. And so I think doing that and seeing the response from people that, you know, it's not, the symphony is not their thing, right? But hearing a string quartet, something classical and elegant, playing songs that they could relate to, that was the key, I felt like, you know, like okay. That. I remember the first live performance we did, we were doing it in a mall, and because I was trying to book this electric string quartet, but nobody knew what it was, and nobody wanted to book it, so I figured if I do something live, you know, where people can see it in a public space. So people asked for CD, and we're in the process of doing that CD. You know, at the beginning, we were selling 200 to 300 albums in 2-3 hours live performance at the mall. And I'm like, oh my gosh. I was like, this is we've stumbled upon something here, you know, because everybody was like, what are this? And we were doing like electric violins, and we were using iPads, and we were like the techie string quartet, you know, the most modern string quartet. So everybody would come and was like, so how do you do this? And it's like, and you guys record this music. So we did that. And to be honest with you, like you mentioned some of the stats, but some of those first two albums, some of them have streamed almost like 400 million times, like crazy numbers.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it was just insane. And then we were, at the same time, there were only three groups at the time when we came out. It was us, the piano guys, and Lindsey Stirling. And so I didn't know anything about, I didn't have agents, I didn't know anything about it. And I think that's the hardest part as a musician, because you don't know what you're supposed to do, how you're supposed to do it. And it's just a lot of trial and error. And we got some things right and some things wrong. Like we were beating the piano guys in streams and Lindsey Stirling at the beginning without any marketing, without any advertising. Mm. But, you know, they started doing bigger tours and TV, and Lindsey got to do her shows and dancing and doing all those stuff. And then, you know, like it got harder and harder to catch up with it. But lately we've been doing some fun stuff. We just did a collaboration with the piano guys, and we have a recording with them, and they're all great. We're all friends, so it's all good. But for a small group run by a foreigner that didn't understand the whole process, I mean, we are blessed to be where we are. And we're grateful.
Did you eventually hire a manager, a booking agent, a publicist, those types of people?
Yes, we did. We did do that. And so, but you know, there's advantages and disadvantages to everything. You know, the more managers and tours, like I loved playing concert, but I don't know how many people can relate to this, but touring is not easy. Touring, it takes a lot of energy. And I have one child, he's 11, and it's a little boy. So I, at some point, you're like, I don't know, do I want to be 100 days out of the year on the road and not see my son grow up? So this is where that part of our business comes into play, where it's like, look, let's do some private events so we still have bring income in for it. Because everybody needs to support their family, right? And then we do some of the concerts because you don't want to be gone so much. I personally don't want to. And I'm getting older. So when I was young, I was like, yes, give me everything. I would, we would do 20 concerts in a row. I would feel like my shoulder, I would have to have chiropractor, massage, you know, like it would be hotel soundcheck concert, hotel soundcheck concert, hotel sound, and then like a dinner in between there. And, so it's good, but it's hard to do it, you know, for a long, long time. So I have a deep respect. You know, even if you look at Taylor Swift talking about this album, like whether you like her music or not, she puts a 3-hour concert with a lot of energy, singing and dancing. That's a lot. You know what I mean? That's not easy. And so it makes you appreciate, you know, the hard work that it goes into it.
There's certainly going to be fans, followers of Dallas String Quartet listening to this interview, and I thank them. Hello, welcome. I hope you'll check out other episodes of Now Hear This Entertainment. But Ion, for my audience who might just be introduced to Dallas String Quartet for the first time, please introduce who the other three members are of DSQ.
Yeah, so we have, like I mentioned earlier, two girls, two guys. Our first violinist, her name is Melissa Priller, tall blonde girl, if you see the album cover. And our second violinist is Valerie Hyde. And his name is Young Hill.
Okay, okay. Well, I want you to tell us more about building one of America's most successful crossover ensembles. I'm interested in the entrepreneurial side of DSQ. What are some of the lessons learned about building a sustainable career outside traditional classical music?
Classical music is, it is what it is, and is respected because it deserves to be. But, you know, as classical musician, we tend to say nothing else matter anymore, which is not true. You know, when I first started looking to the crossover, I went to Berkeley and studied some jazz and improvisation. And then all my confidence from the classical world came, and I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know anything. You know, like people would be talking, yes, we go to 1-4-5 and then it's a flat 6 here with improvisation. I was like, what are they talking about? Wow. They sound like my phone number, you know? And so, and so I was like, oh my gosh, I am so ignorant. And so I would well, let's do this song, and the guitar player were like, well, you know, I don't know the harmony from, I was like, don't worry, I can tell you the harmony. I have perfect pitch, so I can tell him like C, F, G, the chords. And then she looked at me and like, no, I know the chords. I don't know the extensions. I was like, oh, extensions, like flat 7, sharp 9. I was like, oh my God. Wow. It's like, it's been in such a journey because you have to lead all these people. Like, have a classical violist give instruction to a drummer how to play. Like, I can hear it. I know that is not what I want. I don't know how to tell him to play because I've never had to deal with that. Or like kettles for the electric violins and reverbs. And you have to be willing to learn new things and to admit that you don't know. You just don't know. And it's okay not to know. Because we come from this place where I was doing international competition, playing in classical music. I was in Japan doing competition. I was playing serious concertos. And so you get to a point where you feel like you should be respected for what you achieved. And then you start over because you've never played jazz. You never improvised. You don't know anything about pedals and sounds and reverbs, you know? And so you got to be, hey, you know, I was like, it's okay. I will learn. And so flexibility, I found that, you know, the people that are flexible and willing to learn play more than the people that say, like, no, this is what I do and that's it. Don't call me for anything else.
Interesting. Interesting. Great insights. Great insights. I am joined today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Dallas by Ion Zenka from the Grammy-nominated Dallas String Quartet. Visit their official website at dallasstringquartet.com. I will put a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. Their new album is called A String Quartet Tribute to Taylor Swift. While you will certainly go to the usual online digital music retailers to buy it, or to the likes of Spotify to stream it, there is a store option on their website where you can also purchase music and apparel. Already this year, they have performed in Virginia, Florida, Iowa, and Wisconsin, so keep up with them online for details on where and when you can go see them perform live. Social media-wise, the Dallas String Quartet is on Facebook, X, Instagram, and YouTube. Look for those logos, those links, at the bottom of DallasStringQuartet.com to follow and engage with them through those social media channels. I want to take a moment to thank last week's guest, Johnny Reed, for having bought me three coffees. You hear me each week talking about us being able to connect further, especially if there's not a likelihood that we might meet in person, and how that platform gives us the opportunity to engage directly with one another while you show your support for Now Hear This Entertainment. You can see it yourself, but I will read to you anyway the clever note that Johnny attached to his having bought me three coffees. He wrote, quote, "Hello, Bruce, you sounded thirsty in the interview, so I bought you three cups of coffee. Not sure what you wanted, so I got you a cyber frappuccino, a cosmic web cappuccino, and a LinkedIn latte," end quote. Go look for what I wrote back to him. You can do what Johnny did by going to my podcast website, nhte.net, and then tap or click on the bright yellow Buy Me a Coffee button. Ion, I was really struck by this concept of bringing classical music to audiences who never thought they would love it. Can you take us through the mission of making classical music feel welcoming rather than intimidating, as well as why pop arrangements can become a gateway to appreciating orchestral music?
Well, you know, I believe that a beautiful melody is a beautiful melody, no matter when it was written, whether it was written in 1700 by Mozart or in 2026 by, you know, Bruno Mars. There's certain melodies that just resonate with us. And we should not be afraid to try new things, to listen to new things. You know, coming from the classical world, you're so intimidated by, you know, big figures like Mozart and Beethoven. And you're like, you know, why? I don't, like, secretly, that voice in your head is like, I don't deserve to be a musician. I don't know how to. I will never reach any of these levels. And it can be really intimidating, right? It can be like paralyzing almost. I had a project last year that I wanted to write about a certain subject. My background, I'm from Romania, but ethnically I'm Romani or Gypsy. And about 4 or 5 years ago, I went to Dachau concentration camp and realized that the Romani people were some of the most persecuted people after the Jewish people, to the degree of 1.5 million people died in the Holocaust.
Whoa.
And nobody knows about it. So I wanted to do a project where I tell this story. And I was like, well, if I don't know, I'm fairly educated. I've been around the music and the master degree, like, and I don't know my own history. You know, out there, I'm pretty sure there are others like me from this cultural background or just normal people that are interested in history that would find it, we need to know, you know, the history when what happened. So I wanted to write this project that became this like cinematic thing that I focus more on the emotion of it and the anxiety of it, the stress of it, the tension that comes with, you know, being persecuted just for who you are and not necessarily for doing something in particular. And I tried to hire somebody to write this orchestral music because I usually just perform. And I just found myself keep explaining to people, like, this is how it should sound, this is how it should be. And eventually I found I had to start writing it myself because there was nobody that could feel what I feel. You know, there's not a lot of Romani playing violin in Dallas, Texas, you know? And so I had to break it down. Have you heard that thing? It's like, how do you eat an elephant? And it says like one bite at a time. I really had to go down and I was like, look, what is it? At the end of the day, there's a fragment. Every great composer still has a 4-bar melody or line or things. And so I started so small and made this massive project that recorded with London Symphony with a 65-piece orchestra, musicians from around the world, Romani musicians from Vienna, Barcelona, London, wow. Los Angeles.
Wow.
And if you would have said that to me before, I would have laughed because that would be ridiculous. Even now, looking back, I think it's ridiculous that I did that. And so, because I had no business doing it. But I just think that sometimes we sell ourselves short on the power that resides in us, in the creativity that God gave us. You know, we all have something in us. Because one of my things that I said, I was like, look, and I bet you feel the same. We've been around music our whole life, right? My parents are musicians. My grandparents are musicians. They've been playing. My dad was a band leader when 1980. I went to boarding school, more music. I went to America, more music. I studied jazz, different type of music. This, like, there's got to be some music on my own in me that I absorb so much music.
Yeah.
Like, I bet there is something I have to say myself because I'm sure it's like, you know, but it, like, we're so afraid of being criticized to say what's inside of us because we're afraid we're not good enough and we have that imposter syndrome. That you can get paralyzed and not say anything. But I said, look, my dad passed out here. And I said, I want this to be the tribute to my dad. So you need a strong why. And I was like, I'm going to do it. And I was like, I'm going to stop caring about other people think. And I'm going to do it because I want to be a tribute to my dad who played music for 65 years.
Yeah.
65 years, you know, and in a small community in Romania, nobody knew it. And I was looking when it actually came together. We had a London Symphony at Abbey Road, and seeing his last name there, you know, this small musician from small town in Romania that used to play accordion, his last name is on all the parts that the greatest orchestra in the world is reading. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, it's like, if you don't have the power to dream, how much we're missing out. You know what I mean? Like, we're missing out on so much just because we don't dare to dream because we're afraid of criticism. I got to tell you, I was in there. My wife and my son was there. I have never felt, it was probably one of the greatest days of my life, seeing and hearing my music come to life. After performing for so many years, everybody's music, we've done a Christian album, we've done Taylor Swift, we've done everything. And one time is mine, you know? My message to all the musicians is, don't be afraid to dream, you know? And it's your music. There's a saying, you know, be yourself, everyone else is taken.
That's right.
Like, you know, you don't have to produce like Beethoven, like Mozart, like Sting, like Taylor Swift. You know, there's only one you. Say the things that, whether good or bad, you know, like, just say it. Just put it in writing. And to be honest with you, I think I got this encouragement from the Academy and the Grammy community because they put so much accent on original music, because my whole life I've just done everybody else's music, whether it's Mozart or Taylor Swift, it's somebody else's music, right? And I felt like, you know, like I was looking at them and they were so brave, everybody writing an album every year almost. I was like, how are these guys doing? And then one of my colleagues, Cheryl, she just did it on a train. She wrote a whole album from a train from New York to LA.
Wow.
And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I have all the resources. I have the knowledge. I have the skills, the computers, the instruments, the band, everything. It was like, why am I not writing anything? And I found so much strength. And that's what helped me to start to write my own thing. I was like, if they can do it, I was like, I can do it. I know they're smart, but, you know, like, they're not like genius where I'm like, oh, I am so dumb that I cannot do anything like that. And also a lot of this comes with the more you do it, the better you get at. You know
That's
what
right.
I mean?
That's right.
You get better and better just doing it.
Yeah, and you'll build more confidence. Bravo, bravo. Everything that you just said, oh my gosh, so powerful, so inspirational. I am curious then, what does make a great instrumental arrangement? For example, let's bring the new album back into this. Maybe you can answer that question by sharing about the creative process behind reimagining songs like Enchanted or Blank Space.
What makes a great arrangement, I think, is the ability to stir any sort of emotional response. At the end of the day, we're telling a story. We want people to feel something when we do it. In my early career, I was very technical, and I was putting so much harmony. Have an arrangement I would like for you to check out of do you know that song Get Lucky? It was Daft Punk, I think it was called. It was a very popular a while back. I did an arrangement of that is so jazzy, so extensive harmonically, that doesn't even sound like the song. You're like, you don't even know what harmony is. You don't even know what song it is. Because I thought, the more I love harmony, and the more harmony, I was like, the better. I was like, this is so sick. You know, like, you have all these crazy chords. And you know what? Nobody streamed that album. I was like, spent so much time and effort creating it. I worked with people from Boston Conservatory Jazz Department. I went above and beyond to make like the craziest of harmonic. Nobody streamed it.
Oh.
But and then I realized, because it wasn't moving, people couldn't relate to it. And so at the end of the day, it's like, can they relate? Does it provoke a certain emotion to it? That's why on this album, like with some of her songs, like even though they were like upbeat, I took them and made them more as a ballad, like gave them a different feel for it, you know, like, and I took like Enchanted, like I have some of the clients we have, like, they're like, oh, I would love to walk down the aisle this song, but can you guys make it more like, you know, romantic and not upbeat, you know, like a song?
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, oh, there's something there. So people want to hear the song that they recognize, but in a different circumstance. Whereas, like, you know, like, I've heard that, you know, there's like Sweet Child of Mine is another one. Like, it's really cool, like, the way it is, right? But have you ever heard Sweet Child of Mine on a ballad? It's so good.
Wow.
You know, so like, just giving the song a new dimension and being able to put the right instruments. That's the other thing. Like, at the beginning, I was so strict. No, it's a string quartet. It has to be only string quartet. At the expense of creating a beautiful sound. And I like on this album, I have a friend of mine that he plays in the group called Sons of Sand, that they were in America Got Talent finalists, great musicians. And I said, look, there's nothing I can do to make a viola part sound like a beautiful piano. I was like, why am I trying so hard? I was like, let's put a beautiful piano, because at the end of the day, it has to serve the music. So if the piano sounds a lot better, like, why am I gonna try so hard to make a viola sound like a piano accompanying? And so that's what I do. I try to serve the song. I try to create an emotion, and I try to tell a story. Because we have a lot of people that they stream our music when they study, because it's instrumental, no words, right? And we have to bring a certain piece or like a vibe to it. And so that's how I try to look at it. And it's nice also to be able to say it differently, because the artist, original artist, already did it at that exact tempo, those exact harmonies. I was like, how can I do it where it's a little bit different?
I love everything that you just said, and I want to highlight a couple things. Audience, if you've been with me for a while, thank you. But you know that we have heard guests in the past, and I myself have used the expression serve the song. So I love that you're hearing Ian reinforce that, but you're also hearing him say a lot, and this is something that is probably one of the most common themes that we hear on Now Hear This Entertainment, which is guests saying, I just want the audience to feel something. And I love kind of that description that Ian just gave, because back in the intro, I said that Dallas String Quartet bills itself as where Bach meets Bon Jovi. But with the release of this newest album, there are a couple words being added on to where it now has become from Bach meets Bon Jovi to Bridgerton. And as cool as I think it is, Ian, that you have done renditions of songs like, say, Pink Pony Club, Despacito, and Bohemian Rhapsody, as you just started to tell us, a string quartet tribute to Taylor Swift, that album, you did intentionally take a quieter, more elegant approach than DSQ's high-energy crossover performances.
Absolutely. We wanted to have a little bit of a different feel, to feel more romantic and peaceful and beautiful. If you think about the audience of Taylor Swift, you know, it's the, you know, I would say maybe like 15, 16 to like 48, maybe even 60 now, because I'm seeing people that older that go to her concerts too.
Mm.
But they want that optimism, that, you know, beautiful music and the songs that they know. Like, imagine, like, if you're studying for your exam and there are songs that are putting you in a good mood, but it doesn't distract you, you know, from studying for your exam. That's one aspect of it. So we just want to bring something different to the audience when they listen to it. And I think people are going to love this because we're not trying to be pretentious. We're not trying to make something that is not. We just wanted to create a beautiful song that people can enjoy.
But I think what you're also pointing to, and as evidenced by the fact that I did cite songs that DSQ has covered, such as Pink Pony Club, Despacito, and Bohemian Rhapsody, there is, Ian, a surprising relationship between classical music and pop music. Why does great pop songwriting often have more in common with classical composition than people realize?
Well, because at the end of the day, it comes down to harmony, personally. Like, look at Bohemian Rhapsody. Look at Queen. I mean, have you seen the layering on how much harmony is in Bohemian Rhapsody? Where do you think that's coming from? It's all, you know, that rich orchestration from the classical world. You know, that whole intro from Bohemian Rhapsody, if you analyze it, if I don't tell you what it is and you never heard the song before, like, it could pass as some sort of classical. If I change the orchestration, it could be like, oh, I could see this as being a choral or a work or some sort of a symphonic choir piece, or because it's so rich. And so I think, you know, that richness in the harmony that a lot of times pop artists gravitate to, I think it does come from there. That's my theory. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but that's kind of what my thinking is, that at the end of the day, we all love that big symphonic sound, where it's a 68-piece symphony with a 40-piece or 100-piece choir, where it's like, it will move you even if you're dead inside, you know?
Tell me this, though. I had said back in the intro that Dallas String Quartet has appeared at the Academy of Country Music Awards. You performed famously at the wedding of Gwen Stefani and Blake Shelton. I'm talking about high-energy performances. I'm talking about things like corporate events where you're setting the tone and you want to be up there having fun so that the guests are having fun. So could you go into an album project like this newest one and say, well, we could do this song and, you know, it doesn't have to be fun in the studio. We only got to do it until we get it right and then we're done. But, you know, in other words, is there such a question as, you know, we want to have fun with these songs live. Let's not do this one that we're talking about right now because I'm just not feeling the excitement. I'm not feeling the enthusiasm and I don't want us to fake it if we're performing it live.
Yeah, we change that all the time. I mean, sometimes we have, you know, Canon Indeed. Everybody knows Canon Indeed. It's like the ultimate wedding song.
Yeah.
And so sometimes we find ourselves in concert. We would do like four different variations. I remember last time we were doing like the classical version, the rock version, and the reggae version of Canon Indeed. So especially me, I'm a little ADD, so it doesn't take long for me to be bored by something. So we definitely change things. We're working on our next album. It's going to be kind of more focused on rock. And so we're doing some great stuff from Van Halen and like some crazy song with guitar solos and AC/DC and a complete opposite of this vibe. So we know how to do it both ways, you know, but we felt like for this particular audience, this is your fun summer album where it's like light, you know, and accessible.
I like it. As we get set to start winding down, I'm thinking about the difference between guests that I have on the show whose music has lyrics versus someone like this week who does instrumental music. Ian, what is it about instrumental music that often allows listeners to project their own experiences onto familiar melodies? I know that you are hoping that listeners will create new memories with this new DSQ album, whether they're celebrating love, reflecting on the past, or simply enjoying beautiful music.
Well, I think, you know, the instrumental music has a specific place for the audience. And keep in mind, I'm generalizing because everybody is so different. But going back to, it gives you more options. You know, it allows for a conversation. I often drive in the car with my wife and I like to listen to some jazz. And I prefer the instrumental jazz, to be honest with you. also, my wife doesn't accuse me for not listening because I'm focusing on the lyrics. There are no lyrics. So there you go. Which, just between me and you, she often accuses me of not listening. And I said, no, I am listening. I'm just not paying attention. And so I think instrumental music also offers a little bit more richness in harmony because we don't have the words, so we have to make it richer harmonically. Like, for example, whenever you sing the melody, sometimes a singer would just sing the melody and the band accompanies. But a lot of times what we try to do is harmonize that melody a little bit more so you hear more of that melody with a different harmonic context. So that makes the song kind of have a fresh take to it. But also at the end of the day, it's a preference. Like, go listen to this album. See what you think. Do you like it? Do you prefer the original? Because there might be instances that one makes sense and the other one doesn't. But going back to what I said, you got to try new things. You got to be courageous and be like, look, I would never go listen to a string. We have the majority of things we hear people come to our concert. I never knew I could have so much fun at a concert with a string quartet. Mm. Or it's like my wife dragged me into this and I am so happy it was Van Halen. And like, wow. I thought I'm going to be sleepy, but this was so much fun. I was stamping my feet. I mean, like if you ever have the chance to come see a DSQ show, it's incredible. We have we do a set with acoustic instrument and we do a set with the electric violins. In the electric violins, we put pedals, we make them sound like guitars. We do solos from famous guitar players. Then we have light up violin, laser bowing. It's like crazy stuff. Look, you know, when you put boundaries to something, you have to be a lot more creative because you're like, look, we don't have as many things to do ourselves. So whatever we do in our little box, we have to be three times more creative to keep the audience engaged the whole time. So I think the instrumental part has done well. It can be quite entertaining.
Yeah, and I'm thinking back, audience, boy, you know, I used to have, I'm dating myself, I used to have this great mental Rolodex of past guests and past interviews and things like that. And I remember there was someone recently, Eon, that I told them that the song they had sent to me to play on the podcast, that when they first sent it to me, I played it and I was crying. And the guest was really moved. I think this was off the air that I told them this.
That's the best compliment.
And they were really quite taken with the fact that it made me cry. And an audience, I apologize. I don't know if it was in March or April, there was a run where I was doing some jazz artists. John Beasley was on 6:29. Lisa Hilton was on 6:30. The next month, Chris Standring. So it might've been one of the three of them, but you know, I'm citing all of these because they're all instrumental artists. And so, Eon, I love how you're saying that, you know, we are all going to have our own different interpretation and we are going to project our own experiences towards what we're hearing. And to me, in that case, I interpreted it as something that really touched me personally, that made me cry.
And I mean, to be honest, that's the most beautiful compliment. That's at the end of the day, that's what we want. That's what I want personally. I want to be able to tell, you know, a story. And to look, we are being overstimulated from every single point of view. Our attention span has gone to zero, you know, and we lost, you know, this ability to connect with anything because things are moving too fast. I tell my son, look, people don't even have empathy anymore, like, because they don't know how to look. They would hear something bad happen and they would say, oh, I'm so sorry. They'll be very polite and be like, I'm so sorry to hear that. And okay, wow, yeah. And it's like, okay, let's move on. What's next?
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
So we lost the ability to relate, to have empathy, to feel things because we're overstimulated, whether it's TV, phone, games, everything, advertising. And so as an artist, when you hear somebody says like, I took the time and listened, not only that I listened, but it provoked this emotion in me, how can it not be the greatest compliment?
Wow. Yeah, I see that. We are going to close today with another track from the new A String Quartet Tribute to Taylor Swift album. Eon, before I let you go, tell us about The Fate of Ophelia and the Dallas String Quartet's interpretation of that Taylor Swift song that we are about to play.
That's one of my favorites from the album. It has a little bit more upbeat vibe to it, and it's generally just a good song. The song that she wrote is good, and it fits really well with strings. And I think your audience are going to love it because it's fun. It brings a good energy and a good vibe. It's a perfect summer song too. Go listen to it, have fun, enjoy the album, and you know, keep in touch with us, write on to us on Instagram or anything, any of the songs you like, and hopefully if we come to a city near you, you can come to see one of the shows.
Yeah, I know that I'm going to be keeping an eye on the tour schedule. Eon, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much for making time to be on Now Hear This Entertainment. Congratulations to you and the Dallas String Quartet on the new album.
Thank you very much, Bruce. It was a pleasure chatting with you.
You bet. You bet. Audience, with that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to Eon Zanka from the Grammy-nominated Dallas String Quartet. Again, do visit their official website at dallasstringquartet.com. As I mentioned earlier, I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. Today you heard Eon talk about their brand new album, just released less than 3 weeks ago, titled A String Quartet Tribute to Taylor Swift. Look for it across digital music retailers for purchase and on streaming platforms such as Spotify, where I encourage you to hit the follow button and join the approximately 162,000 monthly listeners there. Remember also about the store section of DallasStringQuartet.com, where you will find music and apparel. This morning, I followed DSQ on Facebook, X, and Instagram, and I'm sure they would appreciate you doing the same. We did not get a chance to talk about their YouTube channel. My gosh, over 15 million combined video views on there. So do go check that out, hit the subscribe button, and then watch and like the videos on there. For that matter, tell the Dallas String Quartet that you heard Eon and their music on Now Hear This Entertainment. And be sure to keep up with them online for details on where and when you can go see them perform live. That will do it for episode 648. Thanks ever so much for listening. I will send you out today with another song from the Dallas String Quartet. This is the one Eon just talked about. It is the DSQ's rendition of the Taylor Swift song called The Fate of Ophelia. Thank you.